This is Brian Cook, your host, with a few words from this week's sponsor, More Than You Know by Jennifer Grayson. Owning the most luxurious hotel in New York City, Dane Harrison has it all. He's rich, powerful, and sexy, and he knows it. He's every woman's billionaire fantasy, but the smoky chanteuse singing at his club won't give him the time of day. Can he woo his scornful siren? Jennifer Grayson's More Than You Know is the debut of Kensington's new Zebra Shout program, showcasing the rising stars of romance novels for a special low price. Available now wherever books are sold and at Kensington Books.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 155 of the Competitive Erotic Fanfiction Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Cook, and you've found the internet's number one most trusted source for Muppet boners and horny loners. Upcoming shows include January 14th and 15th in San Francisco at SF Sketchfest. Go ahead to sfsketchfest.com to get more details. Then January 17th at the Virgil in Los Angeles, we're doing a very special edition with the writing staff from James Corden and Conan, featuring very special guest Andy Richter. That's going to be a hell of a show. Today's show was recorded last year at Sketchfest, January 31st, 2015. Features Drennan Davis, Claire O'Kane, Emmett Montgomery, and Lorraine Newman from the original cast of Saturday Night Live, reading pieces they wrote in advance based upon topics of their choosing. Enjoy.
And keep it going for your first round one competitor who has brought a prepared piece, Claire O'Kane, ladies and gentlemen.
Billy Joel sat in the green room of Madison Square Garden, surrounded by roast beef sandwiches, half-empty bottles of Merlot, and bowls of headless gummy bears, just as he had requested. After dabbing away copious amounts of beef juice from the salt and pepper tuft of hair that covered his chin, and only his chin, he stood up and surveyed the room. "Madison Square Garden," he whispered, as he lightly fingered the keys of a white antique Steinway piano. He immediately felt a familiar sensation coming from somewhere between his milky white Bronx red thighs. He smiled. "Time to tickle the ivory." He said to himself out loud as he slowly sat down at the piano bench and began to pull down his sweatpants and Hanes all the way to the ground, like a toddler using the potty for the first time. "Here we go, big shot," he said to his throbbing Johnson, which he named Big Shot. As he stroked his third leg, the Merlot started to kick in and he began to drift off to sleep while pleasuring himself. He began falling into a deep slumber. "Anthony," he whispered as he drifted off. "I see you, Anthony. Anthony works at the grocery store, saving his pennies for Sunday. Mama Leone left a note on the door. It said, 'Sonny, come over and fuck me.' He said, 'I will if I can just come on your back. You should know that by now. We can do it at my house in Hackensack. And then you can give me some money.' Well, it seems like a waste of time, but that's what I'm all about. Mama, if that's what you want, then I'm pulling out." Billy jerked himself awake. cock still as hard as the rock candy he once enjoyed as a child when he'd stroll around Coney Island with his gang of Italian toughs. He continued to stroke his shaft when all of a sudden hundreds of horny people, places, things, and historical events burst through the door, each one fucking and sucking their way towards little Billy Jilly's fat willy. They each sang their names as they streamed in. Harry Truman, Doris Day, Red China, Donny Ray, South Pacific, Walter Wichita, Maggio, John McCarthy, Richard Nixon, or bigger television, North Korea, South Korea, Marilyn Monroe. We all want to fuck you. All our buttholes yearning for a butter churning. We all want to fuck you. So fucking excited, please don't try to fight it. And after everyone had their chance to fuck the piano man himself, they trickled out the door just as the jizz trickled off of Billy's wine-stained lips. He was all alone. Once again. And once again he jerked himself back awake. Still hard. He looked down furiously at his throbbing cock. He couldn't believe that after all that dream singing, he still hadn't come to completion. The show must go on, he exclaimed. And he jerked it faster than he'd ever jerked it before, slapping his fleshy toolbox against the ivory keys of the antique style. Suddenly, he felt it rising from his toes, and he started to shake uncontrollably. His splooge shot all over the piano keys as he sang along in pleasure with the notes his very own spunk was playing. Oh, 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 oh. Thank you.
Claire O'Kane. Short to the point, I like it. Giving over Drennan Davis. There he is. Drennan's got a little bit of science to set up.
This is weird. I'm doing a music one too. This should be interesting.
Boo! Right?
I'm gonna do a very specific song. Let's see if I can get this going here. Okay, here we go. Aubrey. Stevie rolled his eyes more than normal.
Why do I gotta be Ebony Paul?
Well, you know, because you're a black man.
Stevie paused. I'm a what?
You know,
I'm just fucking with you, Paul.
The two broke out laughing as Stevie's self-deprecating joke about race and blindness was very funny. Oh, Stevie, you truly are wonderful.
And you truly are McCartney-ful.
Stevie said so adorably, in only a way that incredibly gifted blind man can pull off.
Hey, Paul. You know what would be fun?
Stevie blurted out. What's that, Stevie? Paul inquired. If you suck my dick. Paul paused, then began to laugh. Oh, you're such a joker, Stevie. You're not gay. Stevie laughed. You're right, I'm not. I'm bi. What? You're bisexual?
You see, Paul, to me, a hole is just a hole. And it doesn't matter to me if you're a man or a woman, black or white, Christian or Muslim, beetle or monkey. All holes are God's gift. And it's a shame if you don't put your dick in as many as you can.
Well, I suppose I never looked at it that way before, Stevie.
Who's the blind one now?
They both laughed and smiled at each other. The laughs faded. And they sat there on the piano bench, silent. Stevie inched closer to Paul until their thighs were touching. He put his hand on Paul McCartney's scrawny British leg. Paul's boyish lips quivered. He looked like a young Katie Lang. Paul looked at Stevie's hand, covered in rings, and began to caress it. Stevie giggled. Paul pulled up Stevie's sunglasses and looked into his two tiny eyes. It looked like the bottom of a magic eight ball filled with milk. And the fortune read, signs point to yes.
Close your eyes, Paul.
Paul giggled. What?
Don't you trust me, Paul?
Of course I do, Paul exclaimed. I feel a real connection with you, Stevie. Not like Linda or any of those other girls. It's like we're the same, but different. But ultimately, the same.
Yes, we're all the same color in the dark. So close your eyes, Paul.
Paul closed his eyes. In less time than they could say goo goo gajoo, their lips embraced so passionately that it gave Paul Norwegian wood. Help, Stevie, wait!
What's the matter, Paul?
What about this song?
Stevie smiled and said, I've got an idea for a chorus.
Fantastic! We can work it out!
First, I need you to pull your pants lower to the ground.
What?
I said no questions, Paul.
Paul, both curious and very turned on by Stevie's assertiveness, pulled down his pants.
I want you to stand up and start playing the piano.
Okay, but...
No more talking, Paul. Just play.
Paul begins to play the piano. Suddenly, he feels Stevie behind him. He whispers into Paul's ears.
No matter what happens, Paul, keep playing.
Stevie kisses Paul on the neck and slowly pulls down Paul's underwear. Then moves on to his own. As he disrobes, Paul can see his huge reflection in the grand piano. His cock is huge. It's even bigger than John Lennon's. And he was bigger than Jesus.
He's definitely not little Stevie Wonder anymore,
Stevie laughed. Stevie takes his huge master blaster and begins to slap it on Paul McCartney's butt cheeks. Ha ha ha!
Yes, I love it. And now for the bass line. That's it, Paul exclaimed. And at the same time, the tune began to sing. Ebony and ivory come together in perfect sodomy. I'm inside you, but now and you will be inside of me. Perfect. It was perfect. Never had there been a more beautiful chorus about butt sex. You are the dark star of my life, Stevie yelled. Your plan's on the run, Stevie. Once you go ebony, you never go oh bloody. Oh bloody, oh! Stevie was about to explode like his double platinum album, Inner Visions. But Paul wasn't ready for inner jisms. Hey dude, don't come yet. Don't you worry about a thing, Paul. Let it be! Gotta get you out of my ass! Get back! Paul squeezed Stevie's blackbird out of his mom's fairy moon delight. It's a very strange reference. We have to finish the song, Stevie. We are, Sherry Amor. Stevie begins giving Paul a reach around. Do I do you like that? Stevie whispers. I'm simply having a wonderful Christmas time. That's what cunts are for. Suddenly, Stevie got up and used his giant cock as a walking cane to find his way underneath the piano. His beaded butt hairs dangled on the floor as he began to give Paul McCartney the most glorious blowjob he'd ever had. Stevie swayed his head back and forth on Paul's Uncle Albert until he was playing the piano. Paul frantically wrote down lovely lyrics as his Sir Duke got the royal treatment. As his mind was in ecstasy, he dreamt of a world where there were no more wars, no more hate, no more need for racial and religious segregation. A world where everyone was given and receiving harmonica fellatio all the time. The world must hear our song, Stevie. Sit next to me. I want to hold your glands. Let's come together. Stevie got out from underneath the piano and again sat next to him. Stevie began to tickle Paul's ivory. And Paul tickled Stevie's ebony in a way that made them immediately so overjoyed that they signed, sealed, and delivered together at the same time. As their dicks gently wept, they knew not only did they have their silly little love dongs in their hands, but they had a hit that would change the world. Ebony and Ivory came out later that year, ending all racism. With a simple chorus. Ebony and ivory come together in perfect sodomy. I'm inside you, but now and you will be inside of me.
Good night.
A record for the most references ever in one of these. Keep it going for Mr. Emmett Montgomery. Hello, sir.
The only music I have is the romance of my words. I love Tuesdays, Jimmy remarked to himself on his lonely bus ride home. Staring into his reflection in the bus windows, he surveyed his bruised face and flashed a grin peppered with bloody spittle. It had been a good night. For a few wonderful hours, he had been more than just a barely noticeable loser that worked in the mailroom. He had been a warrior. And while things might be awkward with Ken from HR when Ken was able to walk again, company mandated Fight Club night was his favorite of all the required team building exercises at Google. Back in his shitty apartment, Jimmy's tongue probed his aching mouth and came across a molar that rocked back and forth in the cradle of his bloody gums. Tongue was quickly replaced by fingers, and he impulsively wrenched the tooth from its socket. "You're an animal, Jimmy," he said in an adrenaline-fueled growl to himself, not knowing exactly why he did that. And went to throw the piece of useless bone in the compost, but stopped. And in a fit of whimsical nostalgia, placed the tooth under his pillow. Jimmy's sleep was a restless dream montage of loneliness and half-remembered heartache. He came awake to the familiar, oddly familiar tinkling of chimes, the sparkling smell of stardust, and the sensation of nimble fingers underneath his pillow. "You are real. It wasn't just a dream," he said to the vision of femininity he had first glimpsed so many years ago through clenched eyelids, an experience that had set an unattainable standard of beauty to him and left him unsatisfied in relationships. The tooth fairy stepped back, startled and confused, and he was able to take her glorious visage in fully. There she was, in the same pink tutu he had thought of often. The same alabaster skin. The same gossamer wings. The same gorgeously articulated thorax. The same six pendulous seeping tits. The same glistening mandibles. And she was beautiful. "It's okay," he said, retrieving his tooth from the pillow and offering it to her. "I've missed you." His cock hardened. The tooth fairy's brilliant green eyes gazed upon Jimmy's earnest face, while her pair of soulful blue ones scanned his bulging erection as it strained through the crotch of his threadbare bare and gravy-stained sweatpants. The scent of both recognition and arousal filled the room, and she approached. Her tutu slid to the floor, revealing a labyrinth of possibility for Jimmy's trembling appendage. A gallery of sopping orifices full of mystery and quivering. "Take me," he said. Her privates responded with a chitinous howl, and a gush of gelatinous fluid erupted from her ovipositor. A sticky goo that caused his clothes to smolder and dissolve. But only made his skin tingle and his head feel dizzy, and for his consciousness to fade into a cloud of ecstasy during the course of their vigorous lovemaking. That morning, Jimmy found the room full of cum-covered coins. And a now toothless smile spread across his freshly harvested mouth. He was in love.
Montgomery. And your final round one competitor, Lorraine Newman, ladies and gentlemen. Clap your hands.
Utter filth. Okay. I gotta get this down. Mandy Perkins was the first designer on Project Runway to come from West Virginia, America's heartland. And of all the contestants to ever be on the show, Mandy was quite possibly the most breathtaking. With silky blonde hair that went to her waist, widely spaced green eyes, an adorable spray of freckles across her nose, sensual pillow lips. The fact that she was all business, well, that just added to her charm. Mandy had one thing on her mind besides winning. She wanted to marry Tim Gunn. She first laid eyes on him season one in 2004. Mandy was 9 at the time. Which for West Virginia standards might be considered left up on a shelf. But when she heard how good Tim Gunn enunciated his words, she felt everything a person could feel between her legs. He doesn't sound like those booger-eating morons around here. He's refined. Mandy becoming a finalist at Fashion Week was a feat of animal cunning. Most people think if you got a southern accent, you're kind of dumb. And I worked that to my advantage as one by one, I eliminated my competition. It was true. Mandy's strategic planning was positively Machiavellian. The last designer to go was Pepe, the woman's evening wear designer from Florida. And as bitchy queens go, he made Perez Hilton look like Shirley Temple. The draconian shit had become tedious for Mandy, so she simply staged a sexual harassment scenario. She tripped Pepe, causing him to do a face plant right between her milky, wiggly 32 double Ds. She held his head in an iron grip, so he had to struggle to breathe, and it looked exactly like he was motorboating her. And just as she had planned it, right at that moment, Tim Gunn entered the room saying, "Talk to me, Pepe." "Oh my, this just won't do. I'm afraid you're gonna have to go back to the workroom and clean up your spit." "Oh, spare me, Tim. This is bullshit. Do you think I give a crap about her titties? You better watch out for this bitch here. Chica su madre, Mandy."
And with that, Pepe left in a hail of taffeta. His favorite fabric, which Zach Posen once said of Pepe's designs, "It looks like Tina Louise meets Cake Boss on a bad day." So that was how it narrowed down to 3 finalists. Mandy, describing herself as designing haute couture for the heartland. Clarissa Tate, the English designer who made it to the finals designing steampunk loungewear. And Craig, the designer who had a fucking sob story each time he was in the bottom 2. But who managed to miraculously pull it out and get to Fashion Week by designing a textile print that had sayings on it. Like, "I've been sober for 9 months now." Or, "I'm doing this show to prove that if you want something bad enough, it can happen." Or, "I was born to do this, and I've sacrificed everything to be here. And if I don't win, I have nothing to go back to." And other maudlin crap. Mandy had won over the judges with a pair of harem pants, her signature design. Nina Garcia, of all people, gave her the thumbs up, and miracle of miracles, she was showing at Fashion Week. Unfortunately, after Fashion Week, all 4 judges
including guest judge movie star and beautiful weeper, Anne Hathaway, were pretty harsh in their critiques. Heidi went first.
I'm sorry, but I just don't see anything fashion forward about mom jeans and a tube top that looks like a NASCAR beer cozy. Did you seriously think putting industrial grommets on a jean would make them edgy?
Heidi sneered.
You have some fresh ideas, Mandy,
sighed Zach Posen, as if he were talking to a child.
But I can't see Barney's carrying a line of clothes that scream, these are the appalling things I like to wear at Walmart. I mean, whatever possessed you to make a pleather romper? It's so tight there should be a new name for camel toe.
Mandy's face darkened as she tried to contain her indignation. I'm just so confused. I was completely kidding about liking those harem pants. Nina looked around the room with a helpless look on her face. I mean, whose idea was it to even have this creature on the show? It just seems so random. Like making Miley Cyrus a fashion icon. Next, it was Anne Hathaway's turn to comment. But Mandy was so angry that everything slowed down for her. Words became muffled and faint. All she could see was the movie star wildly gesticulating with her hands as she laughed. Flashing her ultra-white teeth, the tip of her nose getting red. The designers were sent back to the break room to wait while the judges deliberated. But Mandy had other ideas. She stormed back out on the runway, accompanied by those candy-ass beats that Project Runway thinks is real EDM. She walked straight up to Nina Garcia, who had been the one to most insult her most egregiously.
Ever wonder why harem pants are my signature design? Because I like to be comfortable. And also, people up here in the big city just wouldn't understand this.
And with a flourish, Mandy ripped away her harem pants, revealing the elegance of the Lord's design. Her body was perfection, right down to her little buttermilk biscuit of a pussy. And below it, bobbing and twitching like a bucking bronco, was a massive, veiny 11-inch cock. Yes, she had both sex organs. Remember, West Virginia. Enough said. The tip of her boy, Howdy, was glowing pink, almost like it was angry, and it was. Even though Mandy didn't really understand half the things these people were saying to her, she knew they were disrespecting her. She was going to show these some bitches that she was fashion forward. And Mandy knew just how she was going to do it. She was going to make them beg for it. But Mandy wasn't very sophisticated about the sexual preferences of these jet-set European types.
Get down on your knees, miss. I'm the queen of smart opinions, and agree with me or be ashamed forever. You're going to remember my name, because I'm going to write it on your face with this here pee pappy.
Nina was magically naked, as was everyone else. Nina eagerly knelt in front of Mandy and panted, Oh, pummel my face with that lumpen proletariat pinga. Oh.
Look here now, you're going to admit my designs are out of the box.
Yes, of course, but don't you want to make me submit and obey? Nina groaned, her eyes hooded with desire.
Yeah, submit to my being the best.
No, I mean, don't you want to put your knee in the small of my back and pull my... Oh, God, the voice is all right. No, I mean, don't you want to put your knee in the small of my back and pull my hair and scream at me? Don't you want to punish me? I've been so bad. Mandy looked at Nina quizzically.
Oh, for God's sake!
Nina hissed in frustration.
Oh, Mandy!
It was Heidi's shrill and completely unpleasant voice. She also did that insufferable little wave she does on the show. The one that says,
I haven't got a care in the world, and there you are, fighting for your lives.
That wave always made Mandy, and probably all of the other designers since the beginning of season one, want to shoot her in the fucking face.
I think you
Bingo line is not only fabulous, but it could definitely go day to night. Mandy's eyes narrowed. She knew what Heidi really wanted. Mandy started to rim the swollen lips of Heidi's throbbing, Teutonic twat with the giant head of her hillbilly hog. When she put just 4 of her 11 inches in, Heidi's head rolled back in ecstasy. Mandy pushed it in a little at a time, driving Heidi completely crazy. When Mandy got her whole slut slayer in, she started slowly pumping away at German supermodel Heidi Klum's efficient but surprisingly unsexy vagina. Oh, fuck yeah! Yeah, yeah, yeah! Mandy could see that Heidi was so close, so she pulled out. If I get what I want. But Mandy had her eye on Zach, who was mesmerized by Mandy's slick Samuel Jackson. You want some of this, Christ killer? Zach was practically unintelligible in his response. Oh, God, yeah. Mandy, being unsophisticated in the ways of these New York Jewy types, started to rub her big wiggly boobies in Zach's face, which immediately made his schlanky soften. Mandy suddenly realized Zach Posen was just like Mama's brother, Uncle Sissy. Uncle Sissy never got married, and he liked watching Mama's stories with her on the TV as they giggled in a girly way and ate pralines. Mandy deduced that Uncle Sissy and Zach Posen both were so much like ladies. Maybe they wanted to be treated like ladies. So she did what she knew ladies liked and pushed Zach onto the floor of the runway for everyone to see, spread his legs akimbo, and shoved her giant General Lee into Zach's shit pussy. Shit pussy, thank you, Doug Stanhope. As Mandy pounded Zach's balloon knot, Zach kept yelling, oh God, yes, your clothes look expensive, your clothes look expensive. Anne Hathaway had fainted dead away. But Mandy hadn't forgot the image of the perky gamine movie star laughing at her. So it was with infinite pleasure that she pried open the unconscious, adorkable star's mouth and shot a revenge load of throat yogurt into it. And then took a selfie. Finally, there was Tim. Mandy wanted to show him what love with her could be like, but she knew Tim had been celibate for many years. That was about to change, because we all know that if we love a man enough, we can change him. Am I right, ladies? Tim had fled the scene just as Heidi began to beg Mandy for cock. Mandy found Tim, inexplicably, completely naked, in the break room with all the couches. The other designers left, for those of you who remember I said they were there. Jesus Christ. Tim, I want you to know something. I love you. I've loved you for 10 years. I've fantasized about our life together every single day of those 10 years. Just fashion and laughing and pronouncing words clear like you do. I know you just haven't met the right woman. Mandy, let me stop you there. You're so sweet, but there's something you don't understand, and I feel I'd be doing you a great disservice if I didn't tell you. Mandy put a finger to Tim's lips and pushed him down on the couch. She got on top of him amidst his protests, but she was too strong for him. A girl as beautiful as Mandy with a high-slung fanny and big wiggly boobies has to be. She threw Tim's legs over her shoulders and gently eased her Confederate cock into Tim's Yankee butthole. At the same time, she lowered her sweet southern peach onto Tim's now raging New York fashion intelligentsia. It was the most amazing feeling either of them had ever experienced as they moved together like a butter churn. Oh,
God, moaned Tim. I really think we could make it work.
Mandy won Project One Ray, married Tim Gunn, and they lived happily ever after.
Lorraine Newman. Let's get all the round one competitors back up here. So, you will all be voting on a winner. First, I'm just going to remind you of what everybody read as they come up, and then we'll vote in a second. We started with Claire O'Kane with Billy Joel, then Drennan Davis with Ebony and Ivory, Emmett Montgomery with The Tooth Fairy, and Lorraine Newman with Project Runway. So, pick a favorite with your applause, starting with Claire O'Kane, Billy Joel. Drennan Davis, Ebony and Ivory. Emma Montgomery with The Tooth Fairy. By way of either David Cronenberg or Kafka. I wasn't sure which way he was going with that. And finally, Lorraine Newman with Project Runway. Yeah! I believe that is Claire O'Kane with Billy Joel, your round one champion. Give her a round of applause. Big round of applause for all of your round one competitors. Thank you all so much.
That does it for round one. To hear round two, you can download episode 156. If you like what you heard, please subscribe and rate us on iTunes. It's a big help, as are positive comments. And for details on upcoming shows, you can follow me on Twitter at Brian Cooking or follow the show at CE Fanfic. See you next time.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.